Hi, everyone. Welcome to the West Wellness and Longevity Podcast. My name is Tara West, and I am a functional nutritionist, passionate about how we can use food as medicine and truly heal our bodies. I'm also obsessed with longevity with a love for peptides, fitness, and all the latest and greatest biohacking resources. I spend hours upon hours looking at the latest research and implementing them into my own life and in my practice with my clients. I look forward to sharing all of this wonderful information with you. Hey guys, quick reminder, this podcast is for information purposes only and not meant to treat or diagnose. So please consult with your personal health practitioner prior to implementing anything that you hear about on this show. Now on to the next episode. Okay, welcome back everyone. Today I'm going to do my first ever Q&A, which I'm super excited about. I sent a request for questions out on the Women's Peptide Collective, and boy, did y'all respond. I think we have a little over almost 70 questions. So I'm going to get through as many of these as I can without this episode being like ridiculously long. And we'll just see how much we can get through with it. And then if I don't get to your question, just know that I will save them for the next time I do this, because I'd like to do this maybe once a month or maybe once every other month, depending on how many questions I get. All that being said, I think I should talk a little bit about what's going on in the research peptide world, because man, what a difference a week makes. And I don't want to go into too much detail about that. I'm going to have to continue to be more and more careful about how I frame these things. You're going to hear me talk less and less about some things in order just to keep everything kosher. And so I wanted to prepare you for that. And if you have a question, always go through the West Wellness email. So if you need to contact me, my consultation company for things is West Wellness, and that is separate of the other entity. So please keep that in mind. I'm not trying to be rude, but my team is the one that responds to most of those emails. I try to stay removed from that, and you will not get a response. So just know that. Also, this is why it's very important to sign up for emails. And so if you do go to the Peptique website, at the very bottom of the footer, you can enter your email. It's the only way I can really stay in touch with you when the landscape of these things start to change. But basically what's happening right now in real time is that the FDA has sent out some cease and desist letters to research peptide companies. And that is causing kind of a scare. And a lot of research peptide companies are either shutting down altogether or discontinuing things like GLPs and SS31. Which we all know that Big Pharma has a hand in that. And I do think we're going to see greater restrictions and regulations on these things. That is really all I know right now. I don't have any more information than that. There is some new legislation that's being talked about being passed that has not happened yet. And so definitely don't want to scare anyone or put anyone in a panic about this stuff, but it is a real thing that's happening. And I try to keep everyone on the Women's Peptide Collective. I try to keep everyone updated on that, on what I do know. So if you are a woman and you're interested in peptides, there is a link in the show notes to join that group. And I do try to give real-time information about this stuff when I can. So that being said, enough about all of that. Let's dive into these questions. And let me start by saying I'm not going into a deep dive. There's no way I can. I'm going to answer these questions with very generic responses, maybe not generic, but very basic responses to help you get started on you doing your own research, which is super important, and figuring out what direction you may want to go with some of these things. And this stuff is based, the answers of these are based strictly on my personal experience, are my experience in working with other people. That doesn't mean that what I'm saying is going to be the best thing for you. Always keep that in mind. Hopefully this is something, these answers to these questions will give you a foundation for yourself to start from. And then you can try to, like, again, like I said, do your own research and start to figure some of this stuff out for yourself. All right. So first question. This one says, do 5-amino or sloop need to be taken on an empty stomach? Is that answer any different between the oral and the injectables? I think with these metabolism booster ones, which both of these can do that, I would say probably ideally you would take it on an empty stomach. But the 5-amino one and the sloop are really good pre-workout. So if you like to do fasted workouts, it's a good thing to take those while fasted prior to going to the gym or whatever it is you're going to do that day. Do you have to be fasted? I don't know that you have to be. There are some like AOD9604 and the growth hormone peptides that most people recommend you be fasted, but I don't know that you need to be fasted on these particular ones. So play around with it and see, again, if you get more of an energy boost or you feel like you're getting better results, and that can really be the best way to figure that out. Okay. All right. Next question. Hello, my husband suffers from chronic spinal pain in the tailbone with inflammation. He also has a burning / tingling pain down his leg due to nerves being pinched. What would be best for him to use to make life more tolerable and help him sleep at night when the pain is the worst? Thank you. So I would say ARA 290 for the nerve pain. I've never used it, in full disclosure, but what I know about it is that it's really good for that, stacked with something like the Clo, which can really help with healing and inflammation in general. The ARA 290 also really helps with inflammation as well. And then for sleeping at night, I would do the sleep blend, the amino sleep blend. That seems to be the one, even over some of the sleep peptides, that really is helping people, at least that I'm working with and with myself, sleep really well. Okay, here are a few questions. Is there a minimum age to start peptides, especially tirzepatide or ride? Is it safe for teenagers that are morbidly or overweight, and at what age? Okay, so I'm not going to speak to what age someone could start these things. I'm not a doctor, so I'm not comfortable answering that question. What I will say is this is a situation where I would definitely talk to a healthcare provider. I know that a lot of doctors have put adolescents on these things. And if they are morbidly obese or severely overweight, there's really a good chance that your insurance might actually cover it. So keep that in mind. But at a minimum, I would say those individuals really need to get proper blood work done. They need to get their fasting insulin, their A1C, their fasting glucose all tested to see if they're pre-diabetic or just possibly even have some insulin resistance. And there's a score you can use when you have those metrics called a HOMA score that will tell you if you're insulin resistant or not, even if you're not hitting the pre-diabetic. It's HOMA. So find probably a functional practitioner that knows about those things and get the proper lab work done, especially when you're dealing with a younger person. I would say across the board, that's a good thing to do. The other markers you might look at are like C-reactive protein to see if they've got some inflammation going on, homocysteine. Also, genetic markers can really be good for this. There are genetic markers for things like leptin resistance or even genetics that just help determine if this particular individual is going to struggle from a genetic standpoint with maintaining good insulin sensitivity. Okay. So that's what I'll say about that. Okay. Let's see. Next one. I just finished a 12-week cycle of Clo. I was taking it 5 days on, 2 days off. How long should I be completely cycled off before I'm able to restart? You're going to hear a lot of different things when it comes to this one. I would say at least 4 weeks if you did an 8-week cycle. If you did a 12-week cycle, maybe 6 to 8 weeks. You just want to give your body a break from these things. I will tell you, you'll hear a lot of different schools of thought on this, particularly with the GHKCU component. I've heard people say it doesn't react with receptors, so you don't have to be concerned about desensitizing or building up a tolerance for it or whatever. That's scientifically, I can back that and say, yes, I can see where that's valid. BPC and TB, I would say, just because of the angiogenesis aspect of it and because the lack of research we have with certain things in regards to that, I definitely would cycle that one off completely for at least 4 to 8 weeks. I know that's not a clear answer, but with a lot of these things, we don't have clear answers because we don't have a lot of research on it. So that's what I would recommend doing. Okay, next question. I'm going to be digging into my hormones, doing Dutch test, full hormone panel, good for you, and should have results next week after. When would be the proper time to go about taking peptides? Haven't decided exactly which ones would be best for me yet. I'm still in the discovery phase of what all is offered. That's a difficult question to answer. It really depends on what your goals are. You can start taking peptides at any time. If you get your hormones back and there are some things that are lacking in the way of testosterone or estrogen, you may consider something like kisspeptin because you specifically mentioned hormones. Outside of hormones, there's a lot of things like GLP-1s, for example, even at the lower doses, if you don't have weight to lose or your insulin and glucose markers are looking great. I have seen those really help people, particularly with thyroid hormones, and even sex hormones help level those off. So that's usually a good one to start as well. As far as what to start or when to start, really depends on what your goals are, what your test results end up saying, and you know how you want to go about that. Okay, next question. Can you please explain why it's recommended to cycle on and off most peptides, but not recommended for GLPs? This is a great question. Some of this is due to the fact that, again, we just don't have enough research. So out of caution, people say cycle on and off these things. A lot of these, MOTC, for example, NAD+, those are some that you're hearing more and more that you can take ongoing because they're not necessarily tied into receptors. And a lot of these peptides are tied into receptors and you run the risk of developing antibodies where they won't work efficiently anymore or just a resistance, a tolerance to it for the same reason. And so you want to be careful with that. The growth hormone peptides in particular, definitely want to cycle those off and on. I am still of the school of thought that you cycle off and on most of these things. As far as why the GLPs, I will give it my best guess. I think a lot of it is because the GLPs do have a ton of research behind them. And it's kind of part of Big Pharma's plan in the sense that once you get on these, they want you to want to stay and need to stay on them for long term for gain. Okay, that's one school of thought. The other school of thought is that once you get off them, you go back to not having as good insulin sensitivity. So that insulin resistance starts to kick in, the food noise starts to kick in, and all of a sudden you're gaining the weight back. I still think it's important to cycle on and off these. I still do that personally. And they have a long half-life, so they stay in your system for a very long time. But you have to be making the lifestyle changes. So you have to be getting your protein. You have to be getting in the gym, building muscle. You have to be doing those things. So when you cycle off them, you're not as impacted. And you can stay on them ongoing, low dose in the background for long periods of time. As these things continue to age, we will understand more and more about this. But that is my basic understanding. So hopefully that helps clear that up somewhat. Okay. What are the best peptides to start with, like a basic package? There are so many peptides out there that are popular, but I would like something to help with overall health, energy, and weight control. I'm in perimenopause, suffering from fatigue, low libido, hormonal changes, you name it. Okay, that's a very hard question to answer because there is no such thing as a basic package with peptides. I would say the majority of people start out with a GLP. Because it has such systemic effects beyond just weight loss. But for fatigue, I normally start people on NAD+. And if they don't respond to NAD+ or they don't like it, I will transition them to a MOTC. Or you can start with a MOTC and then move on to NAD. But those are the two I like the most for energy. And then depending on your hormones, if you've had the proper testing done, you know where your hormones are at, I would say something like Kisqali. But the two basic ones that, I generally start people with things like this, or I recommend, would be a GLP, an NAD, or a MOTC. All right. How long do you stay on a peptide before you decide to try another one? And do you stay within the same category, or do you go to the total opposite? This really depends, again, on you and your goals. I can tell you what I like to do. I have stacked a bunch of different peptides at one time. But for me, I like to keep, particularly, let's talk about mitochondria. We always want our mitochondria to feel optimized. So whereas I've stacked, let's say, AOD, 5-amino-1-MQ, and I'm sorry, NAD, 5-amino-1-MQ, and MOTC all together, which is like the ultimate energy stack, I kind of have a school of thought now where I like to take those one at a time. So I'll do some NAD, and then I'll do a MOTC, which I finished cycles of those recently. So now I'm doing a 5-amino-1-MQ. Because I feel like I've got my mitochondria really in a good place, and it's just helping optimize the mitochondria. So I always feel like I have energy. And then I'll layer in, if I'm trying to build more muscle, I'll do a round of growth hormone ones, IPA, TESA, that sort of thing. And then in there too, I'll sprinkle in skin, Glow, GHKCU on its own. If I have a healing issue, maybe I do Clo, but I guess I'm not really answering the question, but my point is that there is no right or wrong answer to this. You definitely want to spread things out. You don't want to overstimulate too much at once, but there's no right way or wrong way. But I would just recommend sticking with one goal. So maybe that's your mitochondria at first, and then moving on to another one. Let's build muscle mass, and then moving back to mitochondria. You just play around with it and see what works for you. Oh, I didn't answer the part about how long do you stay on it before you decide to try another one. You know, a lot of these, you're not going to see the benefit of them until you really allow yourself that full cycle. I find that people will start something and a couple of weeks in, they're like, oh, it's not working for me, and they want to move on really quickly. You really want to give it the full 8 to 12 weeks on most of these. And the other thing I've noticed too that happens with a lot of people is sometimes it's not this instant effect. It's slowly built over time, so you're not really recognizing what it is doing. And so I'll have a lot of people say, see, wasn't doing anything for me. And then I got off of it and then realized I was fatigued all of a sudden. So it was doing something, but it wasn't the instant gratification thing where you felt it right away. And then you didn't realize the impact it was having. So keep that in mind. Okay, next question. My question is, how do we know if the tesamorelin-iberelin mix is working? And also, what is a good peptide that helps for in-between cycles, not for fat burning, but mostly to keep the muscle? Okay. I would say, are you sleeping better? Do you have more energy? Are your workouts stronger? Do you feel like you're gaining more muscle mass? That's how you know if it's working or not. And then as far as when you're cycling off of it, when I'm cycling off a growth hormone one and I want to keep the benefit going, I try to do 5-amino-1. Doesn't necessarily help build the muscle mass, but can definitely help maintain it by the way that it works. And again, I'm not going to go into detail about this because it would take too much time. And Sloop, you could do those two together, and those two could really help keep the gains that you got from the growth hormone peptides after you're cycling off of it. Okay, how should you cycle peptides? Do I cycle MOTC on 8 weeks, off 8 weeks, forever? How do you know? Again, I've got a lot of questions about cycling. No, you don't have to do it forever. In fact, like I said earlier, some people are of the school of thought that you can take MOTC ongoing. It just depends on what your goals are. I love MOTC. I plan on cycling it several times a year indefinitely. It just really depends on what your goals are and how good you want to feel. If MOTC makes you feel really good, then it's something you're going to want to continue to cycle. And so I'm just of that school of thought. If it really works for you, then continue to use it as part of your health optimization longevity plan as long as you can. Okay. Thank you for doing this Q&A. There are many protocols out there that do 5 days on, 2 days off for several weeks, and then we need to cycle off, for example, NAD plus MOTC. If we are finding that the effects of the peptides work with 1 to 2 days on, is it possible to not have to cycle off? Yes. If you're one of the rare people, if you can take NAD and MOTC once or twice a week and feel like you're getting a great benefit from it, then I don't think you would need to cycle off those. You could continue those long term. I don't know of very many people that get much benefit from dosing it that infrequently, but in theory, yes, you could continue to use it ongoing. Okay, I'm 60. I've lost 10 to 15 pounds recently, and I'm happy with my weight. I work out regularly and have pretty good muscle, but the weight loss left my belly and butt crepey and saggy looking. I'm looking to start GHKCU and KPV right after the holidays. Any other recommendations to help tighten up my old skin? Thanks. Okay, so skin tightening is a tricky one. I would definitely try GHKCU topically with that and possibly Snap 8 to see topically to see if that helps. One of the things that I have used, and I have no affiliation with them whatsoever, is a product called Skin Aid. It is a liquid supplement that you drink daily. I'm not going to lie, it's on the pricey side, but it's a collagen supplement that my mother actually got me on board with. And she said that for the first time, and she's in her 70s, that her hair quit shedding in years. And that's something I struggle with. So I started it. And not only has my hair stopped shedding as much, it still shed, but not like it was. I also have noticed that my skin just looks really good and I've gotten compliments on my skin. So Skin Aid, I think, would be a good thing to try in tandem with GHKCU and a topical GHKCU. All right. What are your thoughts on DEXA scans? Any other tests or panels that you recommend to track progress? Love DEXA scans, especially if you want to look at bone density and how much muscle mass, truly muscle mass to fat mass that you have. I get one a couple of times a year. I love getting one after I've done a round of growth hormone and I'm hitting the gym hard to see how much muscle mass I gained. The first time was the most impressive results that I've ever had. The first time I did growth hormone, this has been a couple years ago, a growth hormone peptide, I gained 4 pounds of muscle mass in a 6 to 8 week period. And I'm not a big person, so that was a lot of muscle mass for someone like me to gain. So I think if you haven't ever done one of those, get one before, do the cycle and do one after and see what your results are. As far as other panels, always get your hormones checked. I meet with women every week that are going into perimenopause earlier and earlier, and it's surprising to me. So get your hormones checked, know where you're at with that. Get your thyroid checked, do a full thyroid panel. What else? Get your fasting insulin. A lot of people do A1C and fasting glucose, but fasting insulin gets overlooked. I think that's probably the most important one out of those three. Make sure that's added to the panel. And then again, your inflammation markers, homocysteine, methylmalonic acid to see how well you're using your vitamin Bs, if there's a methylation issue going on, and C-reactive protein, all good. So yes, do a functional health panel, but those are the ones that I recommend. Okay. I've been on IPA for about 5 weeks now, 5 days on, 2 days off, and really not seeing much improvement. I'm exercising 4 times a week. Do you suggest doing AM and PM injections pre or post workout and then fast before bed? Okay, so yes, if you're not seeing results, then bump it up. I'm one of those people that see results off one injection every morning. I do it in the morning. For whatever reason, Ipralin, that's supposed to help a lot of people with sleep, makes me restless. So I do it first thing in the morning, fasted, pre-workout. But if you're not getting results, I would say do twice a day, AM, PM, and just like you said, at least an hour to two fasted before bed, and then again fasted in the morning, and see if that might help boost your results. Okay, after getting off of Ipamorelin and MOTC, can I run a cycle of Sloop? If so, what is your recommended oral dose? Isn't this a question that a lot of people are asking right now? By the way, you can run Sloop with MOTC and Ipamorelin if you wanted to. Different mechanisms of action. If you start to feel fatigue off that, just know you might be overstimulating the mitochondria on some level and you want to pull off one of those, either the Sloop or the MOTC. Usually the Ipamorelin isn't a culprit there. But the recommended dose, like I say with everything, start low and slow. There's a lot of conflicting information out there with these mega, mega high doses of Sloop. And I just know from personal experience that it works without the mega high doses. So if you can get results without that, then I would say do it. But I tell people start out with one, 250 MCGs. Give a shout out to my girl Shauna on the Women's Peptide Collective. I think I was talking to her about Sloop, and she was telling me that she just takes one 250 MCG capsule, and that is plenty for her. That's not enough for me. I take four 250 MCGs pre-workout, so that's one milligram. And that's enough for me. I know people that take a lot more than that, but start with that 250 MCG, see how you feel, and then move up from there. Can I run GHKCU ongoing without having to take a break? I don't know that I would do it every day. Maybe you do like a loading phase of 8 weeks where you do 5 days on, 2 days off, or 7 days a week with that one if you wanted to. And then you cut back to maybe Monday, Wednesday, Friday, three times a week. If you are going to be taking GHKCU that long, make sure you are taking a zinc supplement, because copper can deplete your zinc and then you start having the opposite effect of what you want in regards to hair and skin and that sort of thing. Is NAD plus a peptide you can take long term, or does it have to be cycled? So NAD plus, not that this matters, is actually a coenzyme. It's not actually a peptide. So it works a little bit differently than peptides do. And again, I'm always of the school of thought that you cycle this, that you do a loading phase of NAD plus, you take it for 8 weeks, and then you cycle off of it. I, for example, haven't taken NAD in probably 3 or 4 months because I haven't felt the need to. I probably will start a cycle of it after the holidays just because it's been a while since I've done one. And as we get older, we get depleted of that. And so you want to keep that ongoing. But I know a lot of people that take it ongoing. And so my recommendation would be, again, do a loading phase and then maybe knock it down to 2 or 3 times a week ongoing if it's something you want to take ongoing. Okay, let's see. I have heard you can take taurine with retatrutide to help with increased heart rate side effect. I like how I feel on retatrutide versus tirzepatide, except for the elevated heart rate. Yes, that is true. I have read some research on that. Unfortunately, at the top of my head, I do not know the dosing recommendations. So I would recommend just doing some research on that. But yes, I have heard that, read research on it, and apparently it does help. Okay, Your cheat sheet says to do Cardiolax for 30 days. Can it be taken for longer, especially for people with chronic pain due to degenerative disc disease, mild spinal stenosis, mild scoliosis, osteoarthritis in the hips, and lots of inflammation due to all that and autoimmune disease? Wow, that's a lot. If this is you that you're talking about, I'm so sorry that you're dealing with all that. I would do just 30 days to begin with, but I would stack it, particularly with all those things, with Clo. It is got the KPV in it that really helps with inflammation above and beyond what Cardiolax will do. And then the healing aspect of the other three peptides in it, I think, would be way more effective than just running Cardiolax on its own. But I would run the Cardiolax for 30 days with the KPV, and then I would taper off the Cardiolax and run the Clo for another 2 months, so 12 weeks of Clo total. And then you could do the Cardiolax again for 30 more days, but you want to give your body a little bit of a break from it. Oh, I get this one a lot. I'm hesitant to try IM, intramuscular injections. Can blends and gluta, I'm assuming you mean glutathione, be done sub-Q? The answer is yes, they can. I find that I have less injection site reactions and pain from things like glutathione, L-carnitine, and some of these other blends like the Fat Blaster when I do IM. And if you can get over that hurdle, it's such a game changer and it really doesn't hurt. But if you're going to do sub-Q, I would definitely recommend a half-inch length syringe, half-inch length needle as opposed to a 5/16. It's just a tiny bit longer. Gets past that initial layer of skin, you're going to have less injection site reaction, less bumps, less pain because you're having less bumps. So that is my go-to for everything anyway, unless I'm doing an IM. So half inch, 30 gauge works great. Okay. Do you recommend cycling off tesamorelin? If so, is there another peptide that you would start instead? Thanks. Yes, you absolutely, you have to cycle off the growth hormone ones. They can raise your IGF-1 factors for too long periods of time. With the growth hormone ones, you can develop antibodies. And once you do that, they won't ever work effectively for you again. I see different protocols. I say 8 weeks on the growth hormone ones, but you could do up to 12. But then you want to cycle off those for at least 6 to 12 weeks afterwards before you cycle another one. And a lot of people will say you can try another growth hormone one because it's hitting the receptor site in a different way. But I really think because of that IGF-1 component, you really just need to take a break. Take something like a Sloop or a 5-amino-1 to when you're cycling off of it to maintain the gains that you got off the tesamorelin, and then you can cycle it again. Why do some peptides burn after injection? I think there are perhaps many possibilities to the answer of this question, such as the level of acidity in the body, if the injection was too cold and injecting it too fast. I don't know that I really know the answer to that, to be honest. I know GHKCU is a real spicy one. A lot of people really struggle with it. I don't know if it's the viscosity of the GHKCU. I know that adding 20 units of backwater to the syringe prior to loading the GHKCU in the syringe can really help with that initial burn. And the only theory I have in that is that it thins it out some. I'm sure there is a scientific answer to it. I just don't know it. But I would try that. Again, that half-inch syringe length will actually really help with that as well. And then last but not least, yes, absolutely. You want to inject slowly. Injecting fast is not your friend sometimes. Okay. I am new to peptides and excited to try so many of them. How do you recommend layering in new peptides? I'm currently on Retta and just layered in tesamorelin. I'm excited to try NAD+, Glow, and Thymosin Alpha 1. First of all, if you're new to peptides, you want to try things one thing at a time. What always surprises me, because I've tried so many of the peptides, is I won't have a reaction to something, and you'll read in the literature about standard reactions, but then someone will come to me with a really odd reaction. For example, on the Women's Peptide Collective, there was a thread going on about MOTC and it causing an eye twitch. And I was like, I've never heard of this. And it can't be because of the MOTC. But then all these other ladies started chiming in about how they were getting an eye twitch off MOTC too. So then you have to start to think, maybe the MOTC is causing the eye twitch. And so if you're starting too many at once, then you don't know which one is impacting you. And so you really want to start slow and really get an idea of how each individual peptide is impacting you before you start to layer them and stack them. I know this takes time and patience, but trust me, in the long haul, as far as your health optimization plan with peptides, you're going to be glad that you understand which ones work for you, which ones don't, which ones give you side effects, how to dose on certain ones. Another example with MOTC is that there was a lady that, again, on the Women's Peptide Collective, that was saying how tired she was taking 1 milligram of MOTC, which I can take 3 or 4 milligrams of MOTC at once and feel great. I told her to lower her dose to half of 1 milligram to 500 mcgs and see how she felt. And that ended up being the sweet spot for her. So you just need an understanding of how that you're going to react to this, to the particular peptide, and before you start layering in too many at once. Okay, I'm trying to understand this next question. Hi, Tara. I already mentioned injection sites. This may be someone who submitted an earlier question. When you read, no one says glue, but we both inject there. I still have lumps in my stomach from trying there for a couple of weeks. How about any peptides that make us retain water? I've heard that IPA could, but what about AOD or 5-amino? Okay, I think I understand what you're asking. I almost exclusively inject in the glute area because I'm lean in my midsection and I don't like the bumps. And I'm not saying I don't get bumps in the glute area, but they're not as readily, you have more fat there, so it's hidden a little bit better. And I get less injection site reactions there, so I think it's totally fine to do that. And the lumps, because this came up with another person I was speaking to recently, lots of times, particularly with something like GHKCU, but other things as well, those can last for months if you get the really hard nodule bumps. Don't panic. They're not permanent. But I've had some that have stayed up to 3 to 4 months before they completely dissipated, which is another reason why I started moving around to the glute area. So hopefully that answers that. As far as what peptides can make you retain water, the ones I'm most aware of are going to be the growth hormone ones. I always retain water on ipamorelin and tesamorelin. that's normal. Usually it tends to go away as I get deeper into the protocol time frame. So know that as well. AOD and 5-amino-1, I am not personally aware of that causing water retention. I'm not saying it's not possible. It's not common, and it's not something that I'm aware of or I've had people mention to me before. Okay, where are we on time? Let's double check here. Ooh, we're already 40 minutes in. Okay, I'm going to answer a few more of these, and then we'll save these for the next time. Okay, can you mix your peptide all to one vial to only have one injection at night or morning? Can you reuse the bottle more than once? Okay, I'm not sure what you're doing there with the peptides if you're doing that. I would not mix peptides if they're not already in a blend. Some of them you can load into syringes together, but a lot of them have pH sensitivity. So you want to be careful about that. And if you do load several in one syringe at a time to limit your injections, then make sure you inject right away. You're not leaving them sitting there. I do that all the time, but as far as mixing them like from one vial to another vial, I do not do that. I think that answers your question. Okay, let's try to squeeze in a few more. Any tips for getting that last teeny bit out of the vial and into syringe? Any other tips regarding syringes and injections? Sometimes the injections are virtually painless. Other times they hurt and leave bruising. I generally inject into the fat of my abdomen. I feel like I answered part of this already with the syringe length and glute, so I'm not going to go there for sake of time. If you're having trouble getting that last little bit out of the syringe, there's two things you can do. Pump some air into the syringe. You should do that anyway. Just load a syringe full of air and pump it into the actual vial. And that often will, these are vacuum sealed, so that will help it come out easier. So you can try that. The other thing I've heard people do, I've not done this because I think it's really hard to get that like metal wrap part off the actual vial, but you could try to get that little rubber sucker out of there, or that rubber section topper out of there, and load the last teeny tiny bit that way. But again, that's not something I've done. I just know people that do that. How do I know if it's just a histamine reaction or something I should be concerned about? There's different types of histamine reactions. So for example, CJC-1295, I literally break out in these really itchy welts all over my body when I take that. Now that's a pretty serious histamine reaction that should tell you, don't take this peptide. Your body's not going to respond to it well. And then there are histamine reactions at the injection site, which is very common and very normal. And I get those as well. And I find that people have a loading phase of those, meaning you'll start to take a bunch of peptides at once maybe, or you're new to peptides. And so your body's like, what is happening? And so you'll get these really itchy whelps at the injection site. Some cause this more than other things, like NAD plus tends to cause this. Sometimes MOTC can cause this more than others. The growth hormone ones for sure. I would not be too concerned about those. You can use a Benadryl topical, I often recommend. Arnica can help with inflammation and swelling and bruising at the injection site as well, a topical arnica. Those are both things that I recommend for that. But what I've also found is as your body adjusts to taking these injections on the regular, that tends to calm down some. There's that. Okay, that was a little less than half the question. So I'm going to save the remainder of the questions for another episode just so this doesn't drag out any longer, because I get lots of compliments from y'all about how you like the fact that these episodes are short and sweet. So we're just going to leave it at that. And I think that's it today. Go to the show notes, y'all. Go like this podcast, share this podcast. Right now, this is more important than ever that some of this stuff gets out there. Follow me on Instagram and TikTok. I'm going to really change the way I'm posting based on the information I discussed earlier. And what else can I tell you? Go sign up for that email. I'll also put a link in the show notes to a Jot form where you can sign up there as well. If this all starts to crash overnight, then that's the best way for me to get in touch with you. So please do that. If you're a woman, again, go join the Women's Peptide Collective. I will put the link in the show notes for that. And if you want to contact me, my email's in the show notes. Please go through West Wellness to do that. And I think that's it. One last thing. On the website, on the West Wellness website, I'm totally redoing that. That website was built when I was really doing just nutritional consultations and lab work for people. Obviously, I'm no longer doing that anymore. So just know that a newer, updated version of the website is coming right after the first of the year that will be more relevant to the things I talk about here. And yeah, that's it, everyone. Until next time, have a blessed day.